You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. It's April 11th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated. And as I said, this is the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. It's April 11th, and Notre Dame has completed 10 practices. Big one coming up, number 11 on Saturday, fully open scrimmage to the media in Notre Dame Stadium. We are very much looking forward to that. It's really, guys, it's more revealing than what the blue gold game is, because you'll have first unit with first unit, second unit with second unit, presumably in the scrimmage on Saturday, whereas once you get to the blue gold game, things are mixed up. Really important scrimmage, really important day for the media to observe.
We've actually never seen it before. Whenever we see scrimmages, we see practice, and sometimes you get six 5-minute segments of scrimmage, which is great. Sometimes you get like 8 or 9. Well, that's awesome. But as someone pointed out yesterday, sometimes when you get 8, 9, or 10, you also get threes versus threes and walk-ons running around out there. So that is not the same. This will be a great opportunity. Just, we should let our subscribers know on irishillustrated.com, there will be no video and no cameras allowed. So you will not see any footage from this practice. You'll have to trust everything we say. It's going to be difficult.
I'm sure that'll happen to you.
Yeah, that's an easy one. I wish the listeners to this podcast could see the diabolical look on your face right now, T.O. But no, Saturday is the Jersey scrimmage. It's a treat to get to be there and see it. And I think that it will crystallize some things that we believe we know about this spring, and it will probably illuminate a number of things that we don't know about this spring. Saturday is a huge day.
Well, since our last podcast, we've had an opportunity to talk to the coordinators, Mike Denbrock and L. Golden. And then midweek, Gino Guiduli, the quarterback's coach, and Max Buller, the linebacker's coach. So, and we've talked, of course, to a bunch of those players. So, Tim, jump in here anywhere along the line. I know that you spent quite a bit of time with Gino Guiduli. I thought he had some really interesting things to say. My Thursday thoughts today addressed some things that, you know, maybe I like, sometimes I feel like we're kind of jumping the gun. I should say, sometimes I feel like I'm kind of jumping the gun about depth chart and where they are. I'm a little bit more open-minded about the quarterback position and the left guard position, frankly, as we head into the last week plus of spring drills.
What are you open-minded about the quarterback position?
I think the pecking order is the pecking order, but I think that Gino Guiduli is a little bit, I think he's very intrigued by what Kenny Minchie does and the way he described him as a gunslinger. And, you know, that's kind of dangerous, but I think that intrigues him as well. And maybe Kenny Minchie is doing some things this spring, that makes necessarily makes the competition closer. It really goes back to the whole idea this spring is that you've got four quarterbacks that on any given day can really impress.
Yeah. That's for me. When I didn't feel like he had to couch anything when he was talking about his quarterbacks, like talk about their strengths. And remember last year when Sam Hartman came in, and I think it was Gino that said it wasn't Reese, because we didn't talk to Reese at all when Hartman was here, I don't believe. And Gino, you know, kind of mentioned like, you know, Steve Angeli doesn't take a backseat to anybody. You kind of had to say those things back then, because as we found out, Steve Angeli was definitely taking a backseat to people last year, because as Coach Guiduli pointed out, he would drop back and it would be deer in a headlights freeze. And if you look at the tape now, it is nothing like that. And that's, I love that type of revelation from a coach, because it, you know how, at some point, like everybody, you got to look out and be like, ah, is he going to make it? You know, can he play quarterback for Notre Dame? I'm not saying he can't play quarterback somewhere. He's obviously a talented guy. But now they look at him and think, man, this guy could be our guy. And that is huge that you would have that, because I don't care if Riley Leonard wins the job going away or wins the job mildly easily. Steve Angeli is going to have to play this year. The way Riley Leonard plays football, you're going to need a backup to do something at some point this year. I can't imagine. The way Riley Leonard attacks when he runs the football, that you don't need your backup at some point.
I couldn't agree more that it's just so wholly atypical for anywhere in college football that the QB1 lasts the entire season. And it might only be a series or two where a guy has to get a concussion check, or maybe a guy loses a helmet, or and it's in a game where you can't stop the flow of the game, but The game is where it is, where you've got to have two quarterbacks and you truly have to have both those guys ready to go. That for me, we've talked about the overall improvements in these rosters for Notre Dame the last few years and this year included. But I was visiting with a former member of the Notre Dame offensive staff yesterday, and I was laughing, and he certainly was laughing about the disparity in the quarterback room now, how much better it is now. And he's obviously gone as compared to where it was a couple of years ago, two or three years ago when he was still here. And you can't believe how much Notre Dame has revolutionized its quarterback room for where it was as Notre Dame. And you could make a case for going in and starting any one of those four guys. And CJ Carr is maybe quietly, or not so quietly as we continue to talk about him, perhaps having the best spring of any of those quarterbacks. Go ahead, T.O.
I want to throw this in because I don't know if I mentioned this last time. I may have on the podcast, but we're walking out of a practice with three or four other website writers, and the commentary was universal. Like, I can't remember leaving a Notre Dame practice in the last 6 years where you didn't have to make an excuse for the way one of those quarterback throws. Like, oh, it's okay, he's coming along with this. Or, oh, that's, yeah, but he's such a good runner, it's fine. Or, oh, no, he's such a smart quarterback, it's okay, he can't throw the ball down the field like that. It's, you always had to make some type of consolation. Like, you had to find a way to say, oh, no, but they'll overcome it. These are just guys that can play quarterback.
Right. There's no qualifiers.
Yeah, there is no qualifier necessary.
Well, the more surprising thing is how many times there's been a quarterback at Notre Dame that you're questioning their throwing mechanics.
I mean, they had a 6-year streak of at least 6 years.
Whether it was mechanics and or the inaccuracy of the throws. Yeah, I feel like many times we say some things and then it's maybe taken out of context. We're not saying that they're all starters or potential starters, but they throw the football the way you would expect.
They're all Power 5 starters one day.
Well, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
I wanted to ask you to, you touched on the left guard there. What are your thoughts there at the left guard?
Because we saw Rocco Spindler working over there, and I've been a defender of Pat Coogan, and here's why I've been a defender of Pat Coogan, because I've watched football my whole life, and first-year starters on an offensive line struggle, and then when they're in their, 18, 20 starts, they're better. When they're at 30 starts, they're better. That is a universal occurrence in football all 42 years that I've been covering Notre Dame football. So, I defend Pat Coogan. I know, I'm not saying Pro Football Focus, their numbers are wrong. I understand he gave up pressures and stuff, but I try to take into account the good with the bad and not overweigh the bad. And I think that right now he is still, he's the front runner to win the job, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Rocco Spindler is playing over there instead of behind Billy Shrouth, because he's not going to beat Billy Shrouth out. And I think that Sam Pendleton's a guy that we continue to hear very good things about. And so I think those three are competing for the left guard spot. I think the other four spots will essentially be JB. I know you had said you thought maybe Tosh Baker would be beaten out. I don't think that's going to happen. Emil Wagner's still a good candidate, but the left tackle spot is solidified, or that's who's going to be the starter. Charles Jagusa, Ashton Craig's going to be the starting center, and Billy Strauss going to be the starting right guard. And I think Tosh Baker's taken a big step forward to solidifying the starting job there. So I think it's a competition of three guys. As I said in Thursday Thoughts, the Vegas odds are with Pat Coogan because he was a 13-game starter last year. He'll be better this year. But I think a fully healthy Rocco Spindler with an offseason can push him. And Sam Pendleton's a guy that they've liked since the day he walked on campus.
Yeah, I think Pendleton, maybe of those trio, of that trio, has the most pure ability and upside. That would just be
I would agree with that.
And I think on Tosh Baker, I can't recall if I flat out said I thought he could get beat out or would be beat out, but I said he's got a lot to prove. Nobody has a more important spring on the offensive line, in my opinion, than Tosh Baker. So I'm eager to see what he's able to do on Saturday.
We talked to the linebackers too, and now Max Bulla. I have not said Chuck Bulla in a long time, by the way. But when you said Max Bulla to introduce the segment, I was thinking Chuck in my head. So it's a good thing you did.
Well, I want to say Sam too. I don't even know
Sam Bulla. Who's that?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know.
Anyway, Max is a fun coach to talk to. I like how he gets really excited when he talks ball. You know how people use that phrase? That guy talks ball. And I jumping on a question here, I'm going to say it anyway. I am really excited to watch the young linebackers play in the Jersey scrimmage next year.
I am right there with you, man. I am right there with you. I wrote about them today. John, your thoughts on that linebacker core, which is, you know, I know the first thought after the season ended was, wow, no Bertrand, no Leofau. Wow, they're going to be young. You hope you get Kaiser back. Great, they got Kaiser back, but they're still young. I think the deeper we get into this spring, look, they're going to make again, like offensive linemen, they're going to make mistakes in 2024 that they won't make in 25 and 26. But damn, that's a good room, that linebacker group.
Yeah, I'm very, very, very bullish on the collective ability of that second level of the Notre Dame defense, especially as we continue to hear from more and more people about Jalen Snead. And I've got some notes here from campus that I'll share over the course of this podcast. But I don't think it's lip service, and it is almost universal that Jalen Snead is a guy that's turning heads for all the right reasons. And even offensive coaches are noticing what Jalen Snead is doing. I think that's significant. So, yeah, you cannot replicate the body of work that particularly Bertrand had and also Maris Leofau. But I do think the collection of pieces in this linebacker core right now is more talented, more purely talented than what Notre Dame's had at the second level in a few years.
I have a few thoughts on Snead. It's huge that can be true, and that he is he's really coming of age and coming alive. But there's a couple parts of it. He has to be. It's his third spring and his third fall. If Jalen Snead doesn't click this year, he's gone. Okay. He is not going to come back for a fourth year if he does not click this year. So Jalen Snead had to hit this year. But the funny thing is, you're like, all right, well, you know, Kaiser's involved in almost every snap, and you got to get Jalen Snead in there for, you know, no one's a three down back. He won't be a three down backer, but you're looking there. He has to play 75% of the snaps. You're like, well, what about Bowen? Well, yeah, Bowen could be the middle linebacker. Well, where does that leave Osbury? Well, and then you're thinking, wait, I want all these guys in the field. And then you forget about KVA. You just want to see the rookie on the field because we hear great things about how he picks up defense. He's a natural linebacker that understands defense. I think there is going to be a legitimate four-player rotation around Kaiser. And by midseason, they can get Kaiser a break.
Yeah, and John, I want to hear about those comments about Snead here in a second. I wrote a story based upon, you know, what Bola was saying and what Golden was saying. And I wrote a story yesterday. I mean, are we watching that? Are we really seeing this? Is this finally, we say finally, he still has 3 years of eligibility left, but you know, he was a five-star.
Yeah, but he's a two-year guy if he's good. He's a two-year guy if he's good.
Well, that's true too. But just, I mean, I think there's a coming of age here, and frankly, I think they're just as excited about Jaden Osbury as they are Jalen Snead, which, and so now again, we're talking about, you've got the brain trust of it in Kaiser. You've got Drake Bowen, who's your prototypical middle linebacker. They've got a good situation going there. And Tim, you'd said it many times that, you know, it's time to see new linebackers after all those veterans. That's who I want to see on Saturday first and foremost, because I think that group's going to be really outstanding. JB, I'm interested to hear what some of the other comments were about Jalen Snead, because some of the public comments were very, very praising of him.
Yeah, and they really just sort of reaffirm some of those public comments, but it's just a sense that people on both sides of the ball are specifically noticing that not only is Jalen Snead better, but he's continuing to get better over the course of this spring. So he's not just put in the offseason work and come to spring at a further spot than where he has been in his previous couple of springs or last fall camp or whatever. They're just talking about the tremendous difference in him from Sun Bowl prep forward. And it's been incredibly noticeable. Like I reiterated to folks on all sides of the ball, I think that's impressive. He's continuing to do different things to stand out. I think he's been a real problem for the offense with how comfortable he is getting in some positions that are allowing him now to just trust his natural ability and instincts and speed and physical gifts. And he's been able to create some havoc in that regard. And I would just briefly share, pardon me, I think this is pretty rare, but you've got people, and we've already alluded to him. And yeah, they're bragging on Osbury and Bowen, but you got people on campus already referring to KVA as a flat out stud. This is a true freshman that we've seen look good, that we've talked about for a really long time. But as you noted to open this podcast, Tim, he's 10 practices into his collegiate career. Notre Dame's 10 practices into this spring camp. And KVA absolutely looks every bit the part and then some.
And thank goodness Jack Kaiser came back, because they're going to need that guy.
Oh, no, there's no,
it's just not as fun to talk about. We've been talking about him for a long time. Yeah, no, they need a, I mean, he's the reason you have the excitement about this group, because they don't have to make as many mistakes.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's a general consensus on campus that not only is there a lot of ability there that they're excited about, there's a feeling that there's more potential solutions to the questions and problems that arise over the course of the season because of the diversity of that linebacker group, because of the diversity of skill sets. I think that that might be the best way to put it, is that they believe they've got a whole lot of solutions in that group.
Tim, remember we talked to someone before the Sun Bowl on the field, and he was also excited about the linebackers changing over. Yes. He's like, you're just going to see a different type of linebacker. And he was leading off with Kaiser. He's like, wait till you see Kaiser dropping into coverage. Zone coverage, as opposed to, I mean, because JD Bertrand made himself into a quality coverage mm-hmm. linebacker, but it's not the same situation. It's I can't wait to see it. And I have a Jaden Osbury story coming out today, and we're not comparing him to Usu Koromo at all, but it was fun because he was talking about, I noticed at that practice he wasn't with the linebackers. Now, we had five periods, and he was working with Adon Schuler and Jordan Clark. So I asked him, I was like, thank God you're here, because I wanted to ask about this. He was working with the nickels and the rovers. He goes, I split my time, nickel rover. They want me in the nickel packages as a rover. He does some linebacker work still. But it was obvious because the other guys were down there doing a drill where it was two linebackers with four defensive linemen. And so another writer asked him, I think it was Eric Hansen, do you watch film of, and before he could get the whole name out, Osbury goes, Usu Koromoa. Yes, I do. I watch it all the time because that's the last rover Notre Dame has had.
Yeah,
the rover position, the way it was brought in by Elko and Clark.
Yep. Last thing, just let me make a statement here, and then we'll move on to segment two. Big debate about Mitchell Evans and when he's going to be back from his knee injury. And I said something on the instant analysis that I expect him back for the first game of the year. It's premature for me to be saying that. It'll be about 10 months at that point. I know about the timetables. I know what doctors say. I get all of that. We're going to make calls across the country to find out exactly what Mitchell Evans' knee injury is and where he is and all that. Look, we've been told he's ahead of schedule. He was optimistic the other day. I probably said a little too much in saying he's going to be back for the first game of the year. And frankly, an indication that he may not be is all the 11 personnel that they're running this spring with Raridan out as well. The good thing is Raridan's going to emerge from the spring, should be completely healthy because they're not letting him do anything to re-injure himself. He can go into the offseason and take care of that. Evans can take care of that. Evans may be ready for the start of the season, but probably not, just based upon the statistics and the numbers that go with ACLs.
The good news is that thread on Irish Illustrated's message board ended up with a giant compliment to my dad. So that's really all that matters. Good job, Racer.
I saw that. Yes. Fantastic.
From Dover 90.
Glad I could elicit that response from that thread. Coming up, segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question, and this is a doozy because we love this one. Play Like a Champ 7. What or who are you most looking forward to seeing this weekend in the scrimmage viewing? And we all said linebackers, so let's expand beyond linebackers. Maybe a little linebacker talk just because it's so much fun.
Well, I'm really interested to see Kenny Minchie throw and some of the things that I just didn't really expect Gino Gadulli to talk about him in that fashion. And he is a different kind of quarterback. And, you know, he talked about leadership and those kind of things. He's kind of a quiet guy. That part doesn't come naturally. But his desire to try to force a ball into some tight windows, I'm interested to see if he tries to do that on Saturday. And, you know, it's going to be about 90 plays, right? 85, 90 plays, a competitive situation. Very much looking forward to him and the other quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the wide receivers. It's specifically, I want to see more from CJ Carr. And then, you know, that linebacker unit that we've talked so much about. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot. It's exciting to think about how much more informed we'll be after Saturday. But for me, those are three target areas that I'm most looking forward to.
I would add Jordan Clark, just because it's a new veteran. Yeah, it's incredibly important for the defense. And also Adon Shuler for the future. I think Rod Hurd's brought in to start, obviously. But I'd like to see Adon Shuler just looks the part so much. I'd like to see him go play football for a couple hours, and we can kind of project him to 2025 and also helping out in 24.
I want to share one quick thing on Adon Shuler. He is so intent on improving and getting better and growing his games that I'm told he will go into the quarterback room and sit in on some of the quarterback meetings while he tries to improve. How about that? Wow. That's one of the most remarkable things I've heard.
I have never heard that one before. And I'm going to, at the snap of the football, start with the left guard and work from there. I want to see as many snaps of the left guard, whichever the two it probably is, because Pendleton will probably be working at center. Let's see. We'll focus in on that as much as we can. There's a lot to see. We talk about, we want to see this, we want to see that. You want to see everything. And unless you have film to go over, which we won't have, it's very difficult to see everything you want to see.
And RJ Oben, I'd like to see play, because remember, we had no ability to see this game or the scrimmage last year, and I left spring ball not knowing a single thing about JJB, and he ended up being one of the four or five best players on the football team. So I want to see RJ Oben operate against tackles, because you're not going against Blake Fisher and Joe Alt. You would think to see RJ Oben and maybe Jordan Botello have some success.
And, you know, a guy like Telich too, you know, just I think we all feel good about his future. How close is he? Just physically, he's different than everybody else. He has great length out there, and you don't normally see safeties like that unless you have a Kyle Hamilton, lengthwise out there.
We probably should revisit this question on Monday. I assume we're having a Monday podcast. I just spoke out of turn, but there's a big scrimmage on Saturday. Hayden Adams Z, based on what you've seen so far, who is the best pass catcher in terms of a few categories here? Best hands? Who would you guys say best hands? I'll read them off one at a time.
I mean, the first guy that comes to mind, I'm sure the older guys, I'm sure, you know, Jaden Thomas is, I mean, Micah Gilbert. Micah Gilbert's a guy that it just seems like he swallows the football with his hands.
That's a good one. I was going to say Great House or Gilbert. So I'm with you on the younger guys.
Yeah. I'd be curious. I would think it would be Great House, Gilbert, or I continue to hear a lot of good things about Mitchell. So, Great House would be my first impulse, but Gilbert Mitchell, I don't think can be discounted.
This is a one to have for like game three, but we'll try. Best route runner.
I think that's Great House.
I think so too. I go back to also what Priester said on a recent instant analysis about how he approaches every route.
It's absolutely true. He goes 100% every snap, and you would expect every guy to do that, but they don't. He does right from the first snap that he does.
And plus, Mike Mickens just told us the other day when we talked to him about Great House, opposite sides of the ball, I know, but he talked about Great House's body control and how he can make different routes look like something else. So that, to me, is about the ultimate compliment.
Which plays into the comment by Mike Denbrock that he feels he can play, Great House can play all three positions, which really don't know that. Field wideout is one of his. I would say slot and boundary would be his top two. I don't know. Faison being able to go slot and field, that makes sense. Field makes sense for Chris Mitchell completely. Go ahead, Tim.
We got a quick one here. Then you just said Faison. There's a one. This is one or two guys. No one's going outside it on this one. Quickest wide receiver. There's two options.
Harrison.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and Faison's another option. Faison's the second option for me.
Yeah, and then yards after the catch, that's on that list as well. That's probably Harrison.
Yeah, and I think Harrison's going to
be stronger. Yeah.
I think Harrison's going to be a real impact in the return game. I mean, I'm not being super bold there. The guy's a Walter Camp All-American, but that's been one of the consistent themes of this spring is like he's making us better on special teams. That's the word from campus.
Yeah. Contested catcher. Maybe that's Jaden Thomas. Because of age and strength and size.
Confidence.
Body composition. He knows how to use his body. I would say it's Jaden Thomas or Jaden Greathouse.
I was going to say Greathouse is my next choice. And also, we only saw one full practice so far, and the best contested catch we saw was Chris Mitchell. So we could give him one catch, but it was the best catch of the day.
That is true. We have a question from Coach Aguilar. Quantify the impact of the changes to the linebacker room with the promotion of Bulla and the departure of two multi-year starters. Do you foresee more rotational play? Will Bulla in the room allow Golden to be more aggressive? What would Sneed's ceiling be if he continues ascending?
The first part, we are going to see more rotational play. He said it, and he pointed out there was no way they could have rotational play last year because the backups were light years behind the three starters. There was no way. People that wanted rotational play last year were wrong about football. They weren't able to rotate yet. Now, they are definitely going to rotate.
Well, yeah, I feel like we actually answered this question pretty in-depth in the opening segment. There's more solutions to potential problems. There's more pieces to the puzzle and pieces that you feel comfortable putting out there on the field. And Jalen Snead's ceiling, look, he's one of the former five stars on this roster. It's not littered with a great host of former five-star prospects. His ceiling is that of a five-star prospect, which means he can be an impact. His ceiling is, can he turn himself into a player who earns national awards? That's his ceiling to me.
Just physical capabilities. He's capable of impacting the game in a variety of ways. I thought it was fascinating on Saturday when I brought up to Golden about Snead's reluctance as a pass dropper. Tim, you were there when he first said that. And it was almost like the look on Golden's face was like he was surprised that Snead had said that. And I just thought
Snead told us that. It was Snead that said it. Yeah.
So that tells you about the improvement that he's made in that area. I just thought it was a moment where it's like Golden was surprised that I asked that question. And so that, I mean, to me, that's progress for him. But, you know, where he can make the greatest difference is threatening off the edge. That's where and for him to be fully bought in. And I know everybody thinks, oh, everybody's a great player and they get a scholarship to Notre Dame, and they should all be fully bought in from the day they walk on campus. Well, sometimes they're intimidated by the situation. Sometimes they just don't have enough knowledge to be a good football player at that time.
Sometimes they don't know they have to be a lot better than they are.
And that's it as well. Yeah, a lack of self-awareness when they walk into the door. So I was really excited to hear those comments. Couldn't wait to write the story about it when you start getting such positive feedback about a guy with so much potential.
I will say, though, will Bulla in the room allow Gold to be more aggressive? I mean, he was super aggressive last year with his linebackers and defense.
Oh my God,
Gold, and everything. I hope he's not more aggressive, because that means I think there's going to be more holes if he is. So the same amount of aggressiveness.
I think it's year three for Golden. I think, again, it's the collectivity of the Notre Dame defense that will give Al Golden the confidence to be as aggressive as he wants to be. That's how I would put it. He loves what he's got in the front along the D-line, especially with Cross and Mills anchoring in the middle and then Onye behind them. He loves the combination of pieces at the second level. And obviously, you're good now in the secondary. You're going to be even better once you get fortified with a guy like Rod Hurd actually out on the field. And that should cause me to add, I do want to see Christian Gray on Saturday as well. I'm excited for him.
For some reason, Golden didn't want to like acknowledge the benefits of the third year in the program. And, you know, he just came off the practice field. So maybe things were a little disjointed. And in his mind, it's like, you know, last year was last year. We've got this issue, and this issue right now.
That's what I think happened.
I think so too, because of course he understands, everybody understands the third year through. And that's so underrated because, like, you know, we've talked about a lot. I mean, coordinators, if you have a coordinator for more than 2 years, holy crap, he's entrenched. You know, I mean, if you got a third year coordinator, it's rare. It's been rare at Notre Dame anyway.
I tell you what, I bet you he is going to be on the defensive about that naturally, because he does have some new starters where he had DJ Brown, Xavier Watts, three linebackers, and Benjamin Morrison and Cam Hart. He didn't think there would be a mistake on his back seven last year, a mental mistake. There will be some mental mistakes at some point.
That's why all the praise that we throw out there for the linebackers, they're young, they're going to make mistakes. And suddenly, you know, this perception that we have of Osbury Snead and KVA and Bowen, all it takes is one play for the masses to say, oh, okay, he's not very good. Those moments will occur, but it's going to be over the long haul. It's going to be a good group.
I want to say on the linebackers, Bowen's getting old, right? If you look at it from the sake of fans and how they like their linebackers, he's getting up there, man. Year two, he's played all a whole year. I think we've already seen he can't do everything we need perfectly. Question from Tram NW28. Assuming that Damian Shanklin doesn't land with Notre Dame, how does Marcus Freeman and the staff get over this hump of missing on their top D-line targets? Missing on Shanklin really sting no matter what the reason is, and Tram NW28 says he may vomit if I see him end up in the scarlet and gray.
Well, I get a kick out. There was one question earlier about, you know, Notre Dame's not going to get Damian Shanklin. They're not committed to winning a national title. Wow. I mean, because you lose Damian Shanklin, who probably doesn't want to pay the price of being a student athlete at Notre Dame, frankly, that doesn't mean that Notre Dame's not committed to winning a national title. They just lost out on that guy. But I mean, what do you do when you miss on some guys? You go to the portal and you get a good defensive end.
That's what you do. We're coming around to this podcast, Tim.
I don't disagree with that. I do think it's time for Marcus Freeman to sign a big time dude along the defensive interior where they beat out an Alabama and a Georgia and somebody like that. I think that's one of the off the field and on the recruiting trail. I think that's one of the missing elements. They've had Deuce Knight committed for a long time. I know we've got a Deuce question coming, so I won't dive into that too much. But CJ Carr is on campus. They've landed some extremely big time running backs. Cam was a 5-star at the wideout position, but they have to make that move, and I think that's on Marcus Freeman.
Or why don't they throw money at him and throw NIL money at him? Well, how do we know they didn't? Like, because they didn't get him doesn't mean that they didn't do that. Look, Damian Shanklin, I'm bummed because I thought he was great.
Yeah, I liked him too.
And JB, you're right. I mean, I'm not exonerating anybody. You got to land those kind of people. If you're going to be an offensive defensive line driven football program, you're going to have to land people like that. But when you don't, then you get transfers. Right.
There's options now. Whereas in the past you felt like, gosh, we can't possibly replace this guy until the next recruiting class. And then obviously that's just not true. But there's as much competition in the portal for those difference makers on the defensive line as we've already seen with Braden Fisk as there is on the recruiting trail.
I also don't know what this guy has against California State, because that's who he means, Scarlet and Gray, right? The California State University. They were Scarlet and Gray. I don't end up there though. Actually, it's a tough school.
Go ahead.
All right. A couple questions linked together here. Errol Fan 624. Well, all the talk from national media about this spring portal window being insane. Do you expect this to impact Notre Dame in any way in terms of heavy roster tampering with current starters and maybe the way Notre Dame lost Diggs last year, Buckner? And then a question from Martin Evenflow, taking into account Clarence Lewis's departure, the over-under, this is for you, Tio, the over-under on transfers after next week is 6. Are you taking the over or under? So he's including
He's including Lewis. He went bold at 6. I'm impressed. I thought it was going to be like 2.5, and I could just say over every time for the rest of my life. But 6 is a lot. Post-spring 6. Well, they're 4 over the cap. I'm going to say there's fewer than 6 transfers out, believe it or not. But there might be 6. That's a lot. 6 is a lot, right?
There's been... You know, we're still getting accustomed to the siphoning off of players. And so a lot of those players have already been siphoned off in the previous year cycle. I hate
to. I just counted 11 I could see off the top of my head. So I will shut it off. I want to say over to keep the streak intact. 6 people off the roster by the beginning of August.
Right, what if we said 5.5 and Lewis was the first one?
I'll say over 5.5. If I see 11 off the top of my head, I'm thinking like medicals and stuff too. I'm going under. I think Notre Dame holds on to.
Right, you're saying you see 11 guys that could
leave? That not be on the team next year when the season starts. But you got to remember, it's cheating a little bit. 4 have to not be on the team. They have to not have 4. It's a rule by the NCAA. They're not allowed to have.
Yeah.
They have to lose 4, but that doesn't mean they transfer.
Right. They fall off.
They continue their education at Notre Dame. They could, yes, they fall off the scholarship roster. So I will say under in the transfer portal.
I'm gonna say a prominent name is going to leave. I'm going to leave it at that, too. A prominent name is going to leave the program.
Prominent name or prominent player?
A prominent player is going to leave.
Okay. Prominent names are definitely going to leave because that's, you know, we work in this business and
yeah,
there's some prominent names that leave the game.
I'm just gonna. So when it happens, I'll say that's who I was talking about. If it doesn't happen, I'll say that's who I thought.
Okay. There we go. Yeah. What if he scores the game winning touchdown in the second playoff game?
I'm going to say, and I thought he was going to transfer. I'm just going to leave it at that. I hope that's not too offensive.
Do you think there'll be heavy roster tampering? I say yes, but you got to fight it off. There's always heavy roster tampering.
Oh, yeah.
I had a conversation with the Notre Dame official.
Well, Logan Diggs is.
Told me some roster tampering efforts by other teams in the last year, and I was like, wow, that is a thing. So that's, I mean, I think it's just the way it goes now.
Yeah, I don't
if Steve Angeli would have started the Stanford game and the bowl game, he would have had and played the same way, he would have had even more offers. Like if he showed more than one game,
yeah,
he would really have offers. Like that would be, you can't go all on one game with a team that had nine new starters for the bowl game at Oregon State. I know Notre Dame had nine new starters on offense, but that's what
he's going to do. So to your point, Tio, Angeli would have $500,000 offers. That's what you're very obliquely referring to, is the fact that he wouldn't just have more interest from schools. He would have a lot of cold, hard cash, so to speak, on the table from a lot of schools who would say, we're ready to commit to you to being our starting quarterback in 2024, and here's the package we can put together for you.
From who JND fan, how concerned should we be with Deuce Knight taking a camp trip to Ole Miss this past weekend?
I'd be really concerned. I've said it on the podcast. I think you're going to sweat specifically Ole Miss and Alabama until the end. Until there's a point in time where Deuce Knight is enrolled, signed, enrolled, and on the ground in snowy South Bend in January of 25 or whatever.
You're making it worse.
Don't let him hear that.
Yeah. Irish Illustrated insiders trying to get.
We stand on business. We stand on business here, T.O. We stand on business.
So how concerned? Like, is this on a scale of 1 to 10, or should we have an adjective that describes the level of concern? I mean, it's not good.
He lives in Mississippi, and he went to Mississippi's camp, and you got Lane Kiffin, and who calls himself the Portal King, or who has worn the nickname of Portal King because of his aggressiveness. He's coached in the NFL. You wouldn't be as nervous as you would be if Deuce Knight just took a weekend trip to Ole Miss and then went back to living in Illinois. So the fact that he took that trip and that's the state he lives in, that makes you more nervous.
He's got an offensive coordinator that is a rising face within the industry.
Correct.
I mean, I would, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm 7 or 8 concerned.
I don't concern myself with the whims of 17-year-olds. I would just move on with my life.
That would be a really, really bad.
That would be unfortunate. There's not a lot of unfortunate ones. They're usually at pass rush. There's three unfortunate guys that can not show up to Notre Dame: the quarterback you really want, the 5-star defensive tackle you really want, and the heretofore unicorn that is the 5-star pass rusher that you want in the game as well.
No doubt. He's a freak physically. He's very different than what you normally have. And he's the kind of guy that you can build an offense around. Pete Sampson can speak to it best. He saw him in person and was blown away by the figure that he struck, just physically. Yeah. It'd be, concerned, very concerned.
Hey, what if Riley Leonard leads Notre Dame to a 6-0 mark and gives way to Steve Angeli, who leads them to the next 9 wins, and Steve Angeli is firmly entrenched as the starter next year for Notre Dame? How does that affect?
Deuce Knight with
CJ Carr on the roster? See, can't get too worked up about the quarterbacks, man. They either start or they don't.
They come and they go. Insane ND Tucson. By all accounts, Bryce Young looks physically impressive. We all know he's a little raw in technique. What's a realistic goal for him this season? Real meaningful pass rush situations or more mop-up duty?
He's a guy to watch Saturday. That's a guy I probably should have. I want to see where he is, because when you look at him, the realistic goals are higher than probably what his realistic goal is. So I'd like to see him play And we really got to talk to next time we talk to, yeah, we should probably ask Marcus Freeman about him. I'd like to see Bryce Young do something and get an opinion from Marcus Freeman about Bryce Young.
Yeah, well, I think it was just a few weeks ago that maybe Marcus Freeman bragged almost unsolicited on Bryce Young and what he was doing. I can't remember if that's the case in one of his Saturday newsers, but I think it's realistic to expect more than mop-up duty for Bryce Young. We've all seen it. We've continued to hear it from campus. That's one of the guys that was spotlighted to me this week is what Bryce Young has continued to do. And yes, he has some raw things. He also has great intelligence and great football intelligence and great natural ability. So I think it's and Notre Dame has a need for more bodies to emerge at those edge positions. So Boubacar Traore is another guy who's had a strong spring. I know the questions about Bryce. I think it's realistic to believe Bryce can do more than mop up duty in the fall.
Yeah, you know, like each defensive end spot, there's two. Who can add to the equation? It's a guy like Bryce Young. You know, this is Tim. This is when I think about this. I'm looking forward to Saturday because I think I love it when you and I are sitting together in situations like this. We're going to see about 85, 90 plays. You're going to say, you know, you're going to say it quietly to me what you just saw in that play. I'm going to say what I just saw in that play.
But yeah, except you're watching the left guard, apparently. I need to watch some other stuff.
I'm going to start with that. But yeah, so I'm going to need your assistance there. There's a lot to see. But as you started to describe that, it's like, man, this is what I love about when we're in situations like this, because we can share a lot of information is what we see. And now we got JB there as well. So it's going to be a
I'll be there for football scoop, but I'll be happy to chime in next week on some things with you guys.
That's right. JB will be representing football scoop on Saturday. So that'll be O'Malley and me conversing during that scrimmage. Question from Madden Ed 67. You've mentioned a few times that Cam Williams, he was speaking to me here. You've mentioned a few times that Cam Williams isn't ready yet. Does that mean he's not physically ready yet or the rest of his game? We all need a freshman receiver we think should be on the field.
Well, I have a freshman receiver for you to think he should be on the field. Yeah, all set.
Yeah, I agree with that.
His name's Micah Gilbert. I think he'll end up on the field. We didn't necessarily say Cam Williams isn't ready yet. We were told by everybody that knows he's not ready yet. And then we figured out ourselves.
Well, and you don't want him to have to be ready. Again, it's a visible, tangible piece of evidence that shows how much Notre Dame has flipped that position group. So you don't exit spring fretting that maybe Cam Williams hasn't looked like he's ready to step in day one, because you don't expect to need Cam Williams to step in day one.
You know, physically, yeah, I think he has a ways to go. And since we brought up Micah Gilbert, I think Micah Gilbert physically is further along. And then we know for a fact, just as far as knowledge of the game, level of competition that he's faced, Micah Gilbert faced a lot better competition. So you add those two things up and he's just more prepared physically, mentally, you know, just the level of competition. It's so hard to gauge just how big of a step up this is from high school. And so that's why if a Micah Gilbert had, you know, played on a higher level of competition and has been better coached over the course of 4 years, he's just going to be further along. And so it's not a bad thing that Cam Williams is where he is. We know he's a great athlete. We have seen things from him this spring. I just don't think he's going to be, especially when you consider, look, it's not like last year's numbers or the year before. You have 11 receivers come this summer running around, and it's just going to be really hard for him to dent the rotation.
I mean, they have, with Bo Collins, they have 6 veteran receivers ahead of Micah Gilbert.
Right, and that's why I need to be careful about saying Micah Gilbert, because he may not be able to get past those 6.
But one of them won't, you know how that goes. One of them won't be healthy and all that type of stuff. But there's that's more of a Cam Williams commentary.
And right. Then so Cam Williams will have it even that much more difficult.
Is Cam Williams ahead of KK Smith right now? I wouldn't think so. KK Smith looks good every time I see him out there. Right.
Probably true. Yeah. It's not a wrap on Cam Williams.
No,
it's just where he is right now. That's all.
Denver Maximus. How much did the positive notes about Jordan Clark surprise you so far? I think this was for you too, Priester. How does his play affect the depth chart, especially Mickey?
Well, again, obviously what we saw from Arizona State, his time at Arizona State last year was not the real Jordan Clark. that is definitely a guy to keep an eye on Saturday. And it doesn't have to necessarily be making huge plays. I want to see him move around, and I want to see his level of physicality, because we didn't see that last year. I scoured. I mean, I spent.
No, you did. You spent a lot of time looking for them.
I spent pretty much an entire day trying to find quality plays, and I just couldn't find them. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But we've seen him move around this spring. He just was not physically. I give the kid credit. He played hurt last year.
Yeah.
You know, so now, how does his play affect the depth chart, especially Mickey? I don't really think it does.
I don't think it affects anything, because Mickey is not the backup nickel, other than he has to be one of the backup nickels now because they lost Clarence Lewis. So it doesn't affect Clark works with the safeties and the nickels, a different position. Doesn't affect Mickey. It affects, well, I'll tell you who it affects. It greatly affects Clarence Lewis because he's not on the team because of Jordan Clark.
Well, that's absolutely true. Yes, I believe that.
The case. Yeah.
JB, you got some insight into that. I believe that to be absolutely true, that Jordan Clark's opportunities here this spring directly led to Clarence Lewis' decision.
There is zero debate about that. That's 100% it, especially as Jordan Clark got fully healthy. Probably coming back after spring break is where I think Clark really began his ascension with Notre Dame. And what I was told this week, quote, big time addition to our program. That was said specifically about Clark.
That's really great to hear. And the little bit that we saw of both of them this spring, there's no doubt that Clark was more sudden. Is it?
Yeah, Lewis was having a good spring too. I think Clarence Lewis is a top 40 player, and they absolutely would have used him this year in a beneficial way. But he wasn't going to start at any of the positions. So correct. I don't blame him, I guess.
All right, wrap us up here, T.O.
Scott 24105. With all the offers going out in the class of 26, can we get a recruiting podcast with Kevin Sinclair?
Yes, we can. I think I have his number. I think we can talk him into it. No, I
not blocked. He didn't block it.
Yeah, I put this question last because, yeah, I mean, Kevin Sinclair is a hero within our organization. All the different hats that he wears for us, and he does a fantastic job. So I feel like sometimes some of the work that he does just kind of shuffles through with all the other work. The in-depth stories that he does with recruits and the parents and the coaches, he does a fantastic job. But I wanted this question last because Kevin Sinclair is one of the happiest guys on the face of the earth, because beginning Saturday, at Irish Illustrated, he is going to start getting help. We have, and I promise you, this is the last person that we're going to be hiring for a while, because we've been hiring people right and left here recently. But, and I'm not going to reveal his name, but you're going to find out on Saturday that we're going to have a new recruiting person for Irish Illustrated.
Deion Keeley. Sorry. I thought you were talking about something else that was going to happen.
That would be a nice addition as well. But now Tom Loy has moved on to the national beat for 24/7. And we've been working on finding the right person to replace him to give us everything that's going on with the Notre Dame recruiting department. And he'll be joining us on Saturday. So look for that Irish Illustrated subscribers on Saturday. That name will be revealed. He will be on the job beginning Saturday, and we're looking forward to his arrival and the improvement of our recruiting coverage. And yes, it will lead to recruiting podcasts with Kevin Sinclair and the player to be named later on Saturday. Tim, you going to say something?
No, we're good. I'm excited for the linebackers if I haven't gotten that point across. I think I gotta watch something else. These linebackers are gonna be smashing into Priester's left guards all game long for me. It's gonna be fun.
So we are going to have, we will have a podcast.
Hopefully not like Leofau used to, right? See if people follow the show, they can laugh at that. There's
I think that these guys might find a little bit more daylight than he did when he was pounding the line of scrimmage. Okay, well, we will be back on Monday for a podcast because they are scrimmaging on Saturday. We'll be there in Notre Dame Stadium, as Tim O'Malley said, no film of that. So you're going to have to trust our words. And O'Malley and I will be conferring throughout the entire scrimmage on Saturday. Until our instant analysis following the scrimmage on Saturday, I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and John Bryce. And this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.